भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. So we're continuing our reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 19, it's supposed to be. This is marked at 18. Isn't it 19? Yeah, chapter 19. And I believe today's text is 20, isn't it? All right, so let's find the right page. All right, this is written in prose, which I can barely see because it's dark here, but I'll just read that. Yoso bhagavati sarva bhutatmanyat natmiye nirukte nilayane paramatmani vasudeve nanu nimitta bhakti yoga lakshano nanagati nimitta vidya kranti randana dvarena yadahi mahapurusha. Thank you. Purusha prasangaha. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. After many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. Then one is able to cut the knot of bondage to ignorance, which bound him because of varied fruitive activities. As a result of associating with devotees, one gradually renders service to Lord Vasudeva, who is transcendental, free from attachment to the material world, beyond the mind and words, and independent of everything else. That bhakti yoga, devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, is the real path of liberation. Please repeat. After many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. Then one is able to cut the knot of bondage to ignorance, which bound him because of varied fruitive activities. As a result of associating with devotees, one gradually renders service to Lord Vasudeva, who is transcendental, free from attachment to the material world, beyond the mind and words, and independent of everything else. That bhakti yoga, devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, is the real path of liberation. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Brahman realization is the beginning of liberation, and Paramatma realization is still further advancement toward the realm of liberation. But one achieves real liberation when he understands his position as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Muktir hitvanata rupam sarupena vivasati. In the material world, in the bodily concept of life, everyone is working in the wrong direction. When one becomes a Brahmabhuta, spiritually realized, one understands that he is not the body, and that working in the bodily concept of life is useless and misdirected. Then his devotional service begins. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 54, Brahmabhuta prasanatma na shochati na kangshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Devotional service is actual liberation. When one is attracted by the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his mind is always engaged at the Lord's lotus feet, he is no longer interested in subjects that do not help him in self-realization. In other words, he loses all attraction for material activities. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, it is said, Esha hyeva nandayati yada hyevaisha etasmin nadrishye natmye anirukte nilanye nilayane bhayam pratishtam vindati tatso bhayam gato bhavati. A living entity becomes established in spiritual, blissful life when he fully understands that his happiness depends on spiritual realization, which is the basic principle of ananda, bliss, and when he is eternally situated in the service of the Lord, who has no other Lord above him. That's the end of Srila Prabhupada's purport. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pratarine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschate Deshtarine Om Agyana Timurandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Shtapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishavangsha Shri Rupam Sagadatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvatangsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dhina Bandog Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindabaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyasha Kripa Sindhube Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Adaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So who's speaking here? Who's speaking? Who's recited this very beautiful verse? In this chapter, we've been hearing prayers recited by various devotees. The last devotee that we heard reciting prayer was Narada Muni. But is it still Narada Muni's prayer here? This is not really a prayer in so much as a statement of fact. So is it still Narada Muni speaking here, or is it Shukadeva Goswami? As you know, in the Bhagavatam, we jump around from different narrators giving different overviews and recounts of conversations. So I think we've gotten back to Sukadeva Goswami's narration here, because Narada Muni's prayer ended. Narada Muni's prayer ended back on text 15, I think. And then we began a description of Bharata Varsha by Sukadeva. This continues up to here. Right, the previous verse was the people who take birth in this tract of land, referring to Bharatvarsha. Now, in this text 20, he's continuing to describe those people. So the first point is, after many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. So many of us remember this famous encounter, we could call it. It was a challenge Srila Prabhupada threw down to his leaders at the time. Are you convinced? That was the question Prabhupada asked. Are you convinced? And they weren't sure what Prabhupada was asking about. So Prabhupada is actually inquiring, are you convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? But even before we can get to that point, we have to be convinced about this point. Are we convinced that we're actually eternal spiritual beings? That there really is, after many, many births, as stated here? Or are we still contaminated with the prevalent idea that this is one life is it? So everybody needs to ask themselves that. Am I really convinced that I'm a spiritual, eternal being? After many, many births, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. At least that much we should accept. If we accept that Krishna is God, and that there are pure servants of Krishna, and at least we know we've come in contact with a pure servant of Krishna in the form of Srila Prabhupada. And that was his first emphasis, you would say, which is actually coming in the Vaishnava line. That the Vaishnavas, especially in this age, they come to give the holy name. Srila Prabhupada began his movement by chanting the holy name. Nothing else. He had nothing else really tangible to give but the holy name of the Lord. But he did not immediately jump to describing the glories of the holy name, which is an offense, as we know. To describe the glories of the holy name to the faithless is one of the offenses against the holy name. So although the Vaishnavas come and they give the chanting, they give the holy name, they don't immediately start describing the glories of the holy name. Instead, they take us to the beginning of knowledge, which is the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that you're not this body. You're a spirit soul. So we need to take that to heart when we preach, because there are, you know, still, you could say, misdirected enthusiasm, and there's misdirected enthusiasm in the realm of preaching, that I become so enthused about Radha Krishna and the glories of the holy name that I want to tell it to every Tom, Dick, and Harry that I meet. But that's not the path that's been chalked out by the predecessor acharyas. We see when Lord Chaitanya was preaching to even exalted souls like Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, he did not immediately start describing Radha Krishna Leela. He took them from the very beginning. Jivara Sarupa Hoy, Krishnira Nityadas, Krishnira Tatasa Shakti, Bheda Bheda Prakash. You are an eternal living being, internally related to Krishna in service. You are Krishna's Tatasa Shakti, marginal energy, Krishna's multifarious energies, as we know. Different, and categorized into these three categories: internal, external, and marginal. So we have to know our position. We are marginal energy. We are not internal energy. We are not equivalent to the internal energy directly. We are marginal. We can take shelter of the internal energy, or we can take shelter of the external energy. So you cannot change your category. It's not that I am in a conditioned soul, marginal energy now, but by some process I can become the internal energy. No, we're not. We're eternally marginal. Tatasta Shakti. So this is the beginning of real knowledge, and that's why it's stated here, after many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature. So one has to, before we come to the transcendental platform, we have to make distinction between papa and punya, pious and sinful activities. Again, we cannot artificially think that we're transcendental to acting piously. We can't. We have to make a distinction between what is pious activity and what is impious or sinful activity. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that practically you have to be sinless to become a devotee of the Lord. You know? You have to give up acting sinfully. Now, that's not so easy to understand, because certain things that are accepted as impious or sinful activity, sometimes we see devotees engage in. But if it's under Krishna's, for instance, killing, as we know, is sinful. But if Krishna directs a devotee to kill, like in the case of Arjuna, then that's not sinful. Anything that's directly sanctioned by the Lord is not sinful, even though ordinarily it may be so. So many examples are there. Telling Arjuna to act against the Kshatriya code in different instances, that would be considered sinful for an ordinary non-devotee Kshatriya. But for Arjuna, it was not sinful, because he was being directly advised and ordered by Krishna to do things that were ordinarily sinful. So it's not so easy, looking at the lives of Vaishnavas, to understand what's sinful and what's not. But if we understand that they are Vaishnavas, to be a Vaishnava, a pure devotee of the Lord, means there is no sin incurred in anything that such a person does, even though from mundane vision it may seem that way. So after many, many births, which means, again, establishing the fact of the eternality of the soul, which we have to concentrate on. Again, we cannot artificially become transcendental. There's a process. This process of devotional service, bhakti yoga, is meant to bring us to the transcendental platform. From wherever we begin, one can start practicing bhakti yoga at any stage of material existence, but that does not mean we immediately achieve the topmost result. It's a gradual process. But Krishna is a supreme purifier. He's a supreme pure. Therefore, he's the supreme purifier. So anything impure that comes in contact with the supreme pure becomes purified. The example uses that of the sun. The sun cannot be contaminated by anything that's any contaminant. Therefore, the sun shines down on a contaminated place and purifies it. It withdraws all the contamination, let's say, from some place where people urinate. The sun gradually purifies such a place, without becoming contaminated itself. So this is Krishna's position, because he's the supreme pure. He is therefore the supreme purifier and cannot be contaminated by anything. As a matter of fact, just the opposite. Anything that comes in contact with Krishna becomes pure. And the example is there of Kubja. Although she had material desires, she wanted to enjoy materially, seeing Krishna as a great chivalrous hero. Because she came in contact with Krishna and she directed her desire towards Krishna, she became purified. Krishna did not become contaminated. Oh, here's the opportunity to act lustily. No, Krishna was not contaminated by Kubja. He purified her. By her lusty desire, she was attracted to him, and by placing her lust or directing her lust towards Krishna, she became purified. So Krishna is the supreme pure and the supreme purifier. To associate with pure devotees. So we've all been given that opportunity. Srila Prabhupada came into the Western world where practically nobody knew anything about Bhakti Yoga. They may have heard of the word yoga. They may have, some of them have even had association with some swamis, either by going to India or seeing a few swamis that came to the West. But nobody had any idea of this Bhakti Yoga, the potency, the goal. Like last night when I was making the announcement, because in yesterday's class that Prabhupada gave from the sixth canto, there was a word, what was that word? Mantrinam, I think was the word. Where one is, because it was describing the qualities of a Jamila in his youth. So one of the qualities was that he was practiced to chant mantras, which has now become very popular in society, mantra yoga. But we're practicing, as I mentioned last night, Maha Mantra Yoga. This is not just mantra yoga. This is Maha Mantra Yoga. We're chanting the Maha Mantra, the king of all mantras, the supreme mantra, which has been given to us by Lord Chaitanya coming down in the cyclic succession. And one has to receive one's mantra in the cyclic succession, otherwise the potency is not there. Nishpalam Spriha, it is mentioned. That if one does not get one's mantra coming down in proper cyclic succession, then Nishpala, it does not produce the pala, the fruit that one desires. So, this, we're practicing this Maha Mantra Yoga. This is what the pure devotee Srila Prabhupada has given us. But concentrating on understanding the beginning of spiritual knowledge, because you cannot approach transcendence artificially. Here it's mentioned about liberation. Then one is able to cut the knot of bondage to ignorance. And ignorance is what prevails in the material world. Ignorance of our original position, ignorance of what even is desirable. We become so caught up in our material situation that we act foolishly, just like recently our local basketball team won the championship. So all year long, people have been following them, concentrating on them, yelling for them, rooting for them. Now they win. Now they're still absorbed. Today they're having a parade downtown. And it was mentioned last night on the news that people are already lining up since last night. For what? Your team already won the championship. Why in the world are you going to waste your time staying overnight, lining up to watch some silly parade of, you know, I call them millionaires in short pants. Why do you want to watch these millionaires in short pants jumping up and down? And, you know, it's a waste of time. And that is the worst thing that we can do in our human form of life, is to waste our time fruitlessly. At least, if you're not a spiritualist, at least spend your time to progress materially. How are you going to progress by standing around on some street yelling when some, you know, millionaires in short pants go by? You're not going to get anything out of that. Actually, the guys who you know, make some paraphernalia and go and sell it, they're better off. They're smarter. At least they're not wasting their time. They're trying to make some material profit out of the situation. So the worst thing we can do with our human form of life is to waste. Chanaka Pandit, Niti Shastra, he says, you can't buy back one moment of time for all the gold in the world. And we need to concentrate on that. Prabhupada mentioned that many, many times. Don't talk nonsense. Don't waste time. If you have time, chant Hare Krishna. In other words, if you don't have some practical engagement at any particular moment, then chant. This chanting should go on continuously. This Maha Mantra Yoga means also being aware of the offenses to the Maha Mantra. 10 offenses we recite every day. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written this book, Harinam Chintamani, which explains the 10 offenses, but he goes even beyond that. He lists, I think his list ends at 13. One of the big offenses is to be inattentive. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's not And this Harinam Chintamani is found in our current version of the Folio Veda base. It's one of the books that's included there under the writings of past acharyas, so everybody can read it. So he says there that it is not within the power of the jiva to overcome this tendency to be inattentive. Only Krishna can relieve us of that. So he advises that the way to get over inattention is to sincerely pray to Krishna for the power to overcome this distraction. We cannot, on our own strength, but by our own effort, overcome this this tendency to be inattentive while chanting. And we know, we all experience it. So he gives various recommendations. One should associate with a Vaishnava, pure Vaishnava, as far as possible in when chanting. Observe that pure Vaishnava, how he or she chants, and try to emulate that. One should become attracted to chanting in the association of Tulsi Devi. Various recommendations are there. But the bottom line is that one can only achieve pure chanting by the mercy of Krishna. It's never going to be by our endeavor. That I'm so intelligent, I'm so dedicated, I'm so this, I'm so that. It has to be by the mercy of Krishna. Therefore, one has to, the bottom line is one has to pray fervently for the mercy of Krishna to overcome all the offenses. But this inattentiveness is one of the worst. But then later on, even beyond that, he mentions that in the mind, or by the, how you could say, the conclusion of Haridas Thakur, is that the worst offense is to hold on to this business of I, me, and mine, to identify yourself with this material world in terms of your birth and your position and your this and this. In the mind of Thakur Haridas, this is the worst offense. If you don't get rid of this offense of misidentifying yourself with matter, then you're never going to be able to get rid of the other offenses. It's not possible. So we have to take it seriously. Here it's mentioned, Prabhupada mentions in his purport, in the material world, in the bodily concept of life, everyone is working in the wrong direction. So this is the problem. As long as we remain on this platform of identifying ourselves materially, I am man, woman, black, white, old, young, American, Indian, these are all upadis that we have to get rid of if we want to make progress in spiritual life. We have to do that. Even when we come to the platform of practicing devotional service, we still have this misconception. People think in terms of here's an Indian Vaishnava, here's an American Vaishnava. You know, this is an offense. It is stated in the Puranas. Archa Vishnu Shiladi, Guru Narmatir, Vaishnava Jati Buddhi. This is very, very big offense. Vaishnava Jati Buddhi means, again, to identify a Vaishnava in terms of their place of birth. Here's an Indian Vaishnava, therefore he or she must be more advanced because they're from India. Where is that stated anywhere? Where is that stated anywhere? That because you're here, it's mentioned about the qualities of persons in Bharatvarsha. So being born in Bharatvarsha, which has been reduced now to India, means that one has an opportunity, because just by existing there, one is going to hear about Krishna Nagar. One's going to hear Krishna's holy name in so many ways. So one has an opportunity to take advantage of that. One has an opportunity to take advantage of the Vedic literature, of the legacy left behind by pure Vaishnava teachers. But it's not stated anywhere that you have to be born in India to become a pure Vaishnava. Nowhere. And we see in our modern culture, the spiritual culture, or as we're trying to practice it, that many people are bewildered by this. They think only old gentlemen from India can be pure devotees. You can't have a pure devotee from Kazakhstan or from, you know, Los Angeles. But where is that stated? Anywhere in the Shastra. A pure devotee who is one who is 100% surrendered to Krishna. It's not only old men from India that can be pure devotees. Or one does not have to even live in India to become a pure devotee. Sometimes we also have that if I don't go to India, I can... No. It's not stated like that anywhere. Pure devotee means one who has revived one's original Krishna consciousness, and that can happen anywhere, at any time, by the mercy of the Lord, or the Lord's pure devotee. As we know, there are three classes of living entities. There are those that are liberated, and those that are conditioned, and those that are in the transition stage. One can come back to the platform of pure devotional service. One can either be always situated in pure devotional service. One can attain pure devotional service by sadhan. This is called sadhan city. Or one can become a pure devotee again by kripa city. That means directly receiving the mercy of Krishna or Krishna's devotee can bring us back to that platform. So that's not dependent on where you live. That's not dependent on how many times you've been to India. That's not dependent on, it's not dependent on anything. Because the living entity is by nature pure. And we're just covered by the curtain of illusion. We've voluntarily turned away from Krishna, so we automatically become covered. And Kunti Dev explains that. Maya javani kachanam agyad okshanam agyam. Now, lakshase mudadrisha naatya natyaroryataha. That just like an actor is not recognized even by his own relatives on stage being covered in dress, you know, we're covered by this curtain of illusion. Maya javani kachanam. But Krishna can pull back that curtain at any moment, no matter where we are, who we are, what we've done. Krishna is independent. So it ultimately comes down to the mercy of the Lord that can be attained if one sincerely wants it. It's not dependent on your birth, not dependent on how intelligent you are and how well-read you are. No, it depends on the mercy of Krishna and Krishna's devotee, which can be obtained by our sincerity. So we can stop here. There's a lot more that could be said from this verse and purport, but time has run out. Any questions, comments? Yes, Mukunda Dutt Prabhu.
Thank you for the nice class. Could you please repeat the first sentence of the verse?
Srila Prabhupada's translation, after many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees.
It would seem from that that the association, the opportunity to associate with devotees is somehow produced from pious activities. I was wondering if you could just clarify that.
As I mentioned at the end, that everything depends ultimately on the mercy of Krishna. And Krishna can give his mercy anywhere at any time. So it's not necessarily produced from one's pious activity. But as Prabhupada used the analogy of wet grass and dry grass, one who's on a platform of piety, meaning the mode of goodness, more easily catches fire in terms of devotional activity. In other words, we're going out on the order of Srila Prabhupada, and just like he himself did, giving the opportunity to everybody. But not everybody takes it equally. Those who are more in the mode of ignorance, they may be attracted a little bit to music or prasadam or whatever, but it's very difficult for the deep-rooted desire to go forward to take, you know, place in their heart. It's very difficult for them. Because again, the mode of ignorance means apathy, lethargy, tendency to intoxicate, like that. So when people are in that mode, it's very difficult for them to catch up devotional service. That doesn't mean they don't get any benefit. Anything one does, as we know, devotional service is like fire. And anywhere you touch fire, you're going to get burned. No matter what mode of nature you're in, if you touch fire, you're going to get burned. So they make some progress, and therefore it may be after many, many births for them before they come to the point of pure devotional service. Somebody in the mode of passion is more active and more inquisitive, and therefore they have a better chance of taking to the process. Generally speaking, one who's in mode of passion is very eager quite often to perform pious activities, but with a material motive. I come in front of the deities and I bring $1 and I'm praying for $1,000,000. So that's you know, we laugh, but it's pious, and it's better to do that. It's better to come here and give that dollar to Krishna than to play a dollar lottery. Much better. So that's increased pious activities. But the person in the mode of goodness who tries consciously not to perform any sinful activity, that person is going to have a much better chance of catching up the devotional opportunity when it's given to them. It's not that the devotional opportunity is produced by their pious activity. But when they come in contact with devotional practice, they have a much better chance of catching it up and taking it seriously. Just like Krishna says that Chaturbhajanti Mam Jana Sukratin Arjuna. Arjuna, Artha Jigyasi Artati Gyani Chabaratarshaba. So all four are considered pious, those who are in need of wealth, those who are in distress, those who are inquisitive, and those who are in knowledge. But the next verse, those that are in knowledge, consciously seeking this path, they're on the higher platform, and it's much easier for them to make progress. So the same thing here with this business of pious activities. The devotional opportunity is not necessarily born of pious activities. Prabhupada said, I have created your pious activities. He said, I have created your good fortune, he said. I have created, only a fortunate person can take to Krishna consciousness. One devotee asked, you know, that it said only a fortunate person can take, you know, take to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, I have created your good fortune. He said, just like if somebody comes up to you with $1 million and stuffs it in your pocket for no apparent reason. The same way, I have created your good fortune. By coming here and spreading Krishna consciousness, I've created your good fortune. Is that okay? Or maybe there's something you want to add? Okay. Surah Prabhu, and then we should stop.
You said that by giving $1 here, you have a better chance than by giving $1 at the lottery, in the drugstore, wherever, that 99-cent store. But if you give $1 at the lottery, you have statistically a chance, 1 in 10 million, of winning. But we understand from your Vedic literature, yasya hamanugranam harisye tadanam shinai. You give $1 here, chances are you go home and everything will be taken away. Because Krishna's first installation is he takes away. So how is one who is desirous of $1 million or whatever supposed to understand that by giving I'm going to get, or it's better that I get taken away?
Well, it's not necessarily going to be immediate. Yes, Krishna may apparently take away in the beginning. That is Krishna's prerogative. But we see that many, many people are born into great wealth. That's not an accident. That means in the past they've given something to Krishna, and Krishna's rewarding them because they still have material desires. So, just like with the lottery, it's not that you go to the store, you put down your dollar, and you're going to go home with $1 million. Some people play for decades before they hit one hit. Some people play their whole life and don't hit anything. Some people play, they get it, and it's taken away. So taking away also happens. I remember when I was in San Diego in the early 90s, there was some guy who was praying on, you know, praying P-R-E-Y-I-N-G, not P-R-A-Y. He was praying on people who had retired with lots of money. He scammed them out of their money. He came in with some, you know, investment scheme and scammed them out of their money. Now, this guy was such a rascal. Even after they caught him and put him in jail, from his jail cell, he was calling the same people because he still had the list of names and telling them that he was a lawyer who was going to get their money back. All they had to do was make a deposit of $1,000. So, taking away happens anyway. You're going to get your money taken away. If not before death, then by some, you know, scheme. Like Prabhupada was saying in yesterday's class, that an intelligent person sees every woman except his wife as mother, and he sees other people's possession as garbage. Whereas the non-devotee, the unintelligent person, they see every woman as an opportunity for sense gratification, and they cheat others out of their possessions. So you're going to get cheated anyway. So better to be cheated by Krishna than to be cheated by Maya. Jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.